Welcome back to the Weekside Podcast. This is Jenny Brentis. I'm in New York. We have Connor Orr joining across the river in New Jersey. We're recording a little bit early for this Christmas week edition of the Weekside Podcast. We're recording on Monday, so before the Monday night football game, so we won't touch on that, but there is a lot of other material to cover. This was a nice Christmas charcuterie board, Connor, of games this weekend, a little bit to satisfy whatever you were looking for. You know, we have the Patriots, their offense looking better than it has in weeks, maybe all season, with the unlikely emergence of a Landon Roberts as a fullback. We had Seattle and Houston sort of raising some doubts about how far they actually can go in the playoffs, but Seattle perhaps taking some steps to address that this week. We had the game that I was really down on, the NFC East game in Philadelphia against the Cowboys. I said I wasn't looking forward to it, Connor, but I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. Probably because of all of the things that happened, all of the intrigue, not because it was a great football game, but because where was Amari Cooper on the final play and the Cowboys final play and what happened to the Cowboys team playing? A lot of intrigue. Even non-playoffs related matchups had something for everybody, like the Giants winning in Washington and then coming home and playing Flip Cup in a Hoboken bar.
I saw that. I don't know. What was your immediate reaction to that? Because I'm still processing that video. I don't know. It's probably going on 12 hours now.
There's been a lot of discussion about the Flip Cup video. I figured we would probably have differing views on it, Connor. I liked it. You know, I'm all in on the Danny Dimes and having a little celebration after a good game. And you know me, I'm hoping that the early prognostications on Daniel Jones proved true. So felt like it was a nice night, showed some camaraderie, good vibe between him and Eli. But I know that you probably differ because we often have different viewpoints on these things, Connor.
I think it would depend a lot on what bar it was in Hoboken. Were you ever a Hoboken person at all or no?
No. Very difficult to get to.
Yes. I would say I've had largely negative experiences in Hoboken because the only people that can hang out in Hoboken are the people who live in Hoboken, right? And then they make you feel bad for not coming to visit them in Hoboken. And Hoboken is like, it's like accessing an island by boat. There's just no way to get there. There's no way to park. And every drink and piece of food costs $100.
I think all of that is true. One-upping that was my sister, who last weekend when we went to see the Christmas lights in Diker Heights in Brooklyn, wanted to go to a Polish restaurant. We are both Polish, and it was closed. And then she saw that there was another outpost of the same Polish restaurant in Staten Island and suggested going there, at which point I was like, we are absolutely not going to Staten Island on 9 p.m. on a Friday night and trying to get home to Manhattan. But we digress, which is what my AP U.S. history teacher used to say. But I digress. I didn't think we would go down this route in the opener, Connor, but just really sets up for a smorgasbord of a show. We've got a lot of topics to cover. It was a fun weekend of football. We have one more week, and it's a good way to hopefully give people some entertainment for their travels home for the holidays.
Yeah. You know, it was like the one thing that I realized, and I realize it on the same day every year. It's after this week that really puts a sort of a speed bump on my path to holiday joy. I mean, I celebrate Christmas, but whatever holiday you celebrate, is that, you know, I do the playoff picture post after the Sunday night game every week. So we have it online for Monday morning. And I always forget that it is such a leisure activity until this week when we care deeply about all the seating. And so something that takes you 15 to 25 minutes now takes like 4 hours to do because it's like, well, Seattle can have the one seat or the two seat or the three seat. I feel like it's particularly wild this year where like there's so many things that even though we kind of know who the teams are, so many things can still happen this weekend.
Yes. I remember you and I sitting in press boxes trying to do the playoff math on our own.
Oh, my God.
This was a day before there were, like, all of these generators that make it easier. We'd be sitting there going down the tiebreaker list and, like, crossing things out and making charts with pen and paper. But I think we will get more of that later in the show, Connor. So before we hit the news topics, let's take a quick break. All right, back with news topic number one. Amid a rash of bad injury news for Seattle that includes two heavily used running backs and a left tackle, rumors have begun to circulate about a reunion with 34-year-old Marshawn Lynch. Would the reclusive one-time Seattle star be interested in coming back, or is he a ghost of Christmas's past? So again, we'll remind you, we're recording this on Monday, so these reports are just bubbling to the surface, but Pete Carroll has said we're going to give him a real good chance to play for Seattle again, and they're bringing him in for a physical and certainly need help at the running back position. They already lost Penny this season. Chris Carson and Procise went out in Sunday's game, and so there's a lot for Seattle to address, because right now, they don't look like a team that can make a lot of noise in the playoffs, right? They've been this weird team all season long, sort of hard to get a handle on how good they are. So one week, they look like world beaters. Another week, they're stumbling against the Cardinals. So this is an interesting move, I think, Connor.
I was always curious, was Marshawn on Team Russell, or was he on Team Angry Anonymous Teammate? Do we know?
Well, I figured with the... since he was frustrated about not getting the ball and the ball being put in Wilson's hands, I always assumed it was that direction. But I guess I don't know for sure where things stand. Although I do think at this point in time, there is still a lot of love for the Seattle organization from Lynch, was my impression.
I think it would be fascinating, you know, in spurts in Oakland with the rest that he gave himself, he looked great. I mean, I think he still looked like a viable running back. It was only down the stretch during that first John Gruden season. Did he play the first season with John Gruden where he started to look a little ineffective because that offensive line was falling apart? But yeah, I mean, I think this would be interesting. I would, just from the optics perspective, to have him back with one game left for the division, and you know he's going to be amped up. I don't know. That's going to be fun, right?
Yeah, I think so too. And I think from like a psychological perspective, because if you are a team that's been losing players late in the year and maybe hitting some stumbles, you're sort of looking for something to redirect and regain that momentum, because this is not the time of year you want to feel like you're low on momentum. And I feel like Lynch is definitely a player that can do that. He's always been, you know, beloved by teammates, and they've always had so many good things to say about his presence in the locker room. So this seems like the kind of move that could rejuvenate that feeling around the team. Again, by the time this podcast comes out, could have taken other twists and turns. But just the fact that they are looking for outside help and would extend this opportunity to Lynch says something about the fact that they know they need a little bit something more to be a playoff contender at this point in time with the injuries that have piled up.
It's so fascinating that we see sort of the bottoming out. Like, we talk all year relatively accurately about sort of the meaninglessness of the running back position or the relatively low value of the running back position, but then you get to a certain point where sort of the lines cross and you need more talent than you have, and they're no longer these sort of replaceable parts. Like, you're seeing that in Kansas City, I think, a little bit. Minnesota, we're taping this on Monday, but you know they're theoretically on their third and fourth string running backs right now against Green Bay heading into that game. And it's funny that, you know, all year long it's like, well, they don't matter, you can get these guys in the fifth, sixth, and seventh round, but you come to a point where it's like, oh man, this is the bottoming out period. Like, we need something more than we have now.
Yeah, and you know, it's so cliche to say it, but it really is true that, like, in the cold weather months and this time of year, you kind of want those running backs that can be a big part of the offense if it's a cold or messy day outside, and also who can kind of milk the clock if you're in a situation where you need that. So it really does, you know, it's like the same way as defenses, right? You know, you kind of overlook it until you really need it, right? And I feel like running backs are the same way.
It's like I remember when always comes back to the 2010 Jets when they were running LaDainian Tomlinson early in the season because Sean Green was going to take the reins as the bell cow in the winter months.
Definitely. That was all. I mean, that was in my head when I said that, Connor. It's like you could read my mind, but I just didn't go there because I was like, well, you know, if I bring up a Sean Green reference. But I'm so glad you did, because that is really the spirit of this show, Connor.
That's right. I never forget that. I mean, that's where, you know, we learned a little more about football and sort of had our formative years. And so I will never forget the idea of a November, December bell cow. That's ingrained in me forever. And now I always look at teams and I wonder why they don't have one, because that's what feels right to me.
And Lynch could be that for the Seahawks.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Number two, early this season, New England was on pace for not just the number one defense in the league, but a historically great defense. San Francisco was also very dominant. Now it seems like the field has leveled off a bit as we head into the winter months, which is an interesting development for some of the league's high-flying offenses. We still have Kansas City that's making their way through the playoffs, New Orleans, Green Bay. Is this a momentary dip or trend, or are a lot of coordinators preparing to find some coal in their stockings this winter?
Oh, Connor, I figured there was going to be a couple good puns in here. We got one in.
The look on your face when you realized that wasn't a one-time bit was good. It was because you were very, you're like, oh no, there's three more of these at least.
There's a lot more hidden. Maybe there's an orange in the bottom of the stocking too. Do you get oranges in your stocking? I generally do. So
an orange in the stocking?
Yeah, like a navel orange. It's like, I don't know if it's a tradition or something. No,
really?
I don't know. Thought it was a thing.
But one person in ours still gets coal. We have a lump of coal.
And it's for the person. Is it for the person who's not behaved well this year? Or is it for like always the same person?
Well, you know, and there were times where, I guess this is on my wife's side, and there are times when like, you know, it caused some minor issues, like people got upset and wondered why. And I think it was more like a joke, like, you know, I think the year that I got engaged, I got the coal because it's like, oh, you're taking our daughter away.
Oh.
But it was in a jokey way, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I see. Interesting.
We just usually give it to the dog because he likes to play with it.
That seems to be the safest. Well, it feels like with defense, it's sort of the inverse of what we saw last year, right? Where the defenses kind of came alive and became a big factor late in the season and obviously in the Super Bowl after the offense was the story of the year. And this year, a big part of the narrative of the early season was like, all right, defense is picking up where things left off in the Super Bowl, and they're going to be carrying some of the best teams in the league. And we've just seen like more cases where that's not been the case. Really, San Francisco is a prime one, because their defense was such a big part of when they were undefeated early in the season. And then we saw the shootout with the Saints, and it seems like and then obviously the Rams on Saturday night, high scoring game. So it just seems like the 49ers defense has regressed a little bit. New England's defense isn't suffocating as it had been either early in the season. So I don't know. These things come in waves, but it struck me as being sort of the inverse of what we saw in 2018.
Do you think it's possible that we're entering a period where sort of the cycles are just shorter of, you know, whatever side of the ball has the upper hand, and maybe offenses especially can, with the way that they're able to move around and kind of use their pieces a little bit easier than defenses, that, I don't know, maybe they're just going to have shorter down periods than they have in the past because it's just the availability of all the information, the diversity of what they're able to do. I don't know, maybe it's like they can be down for a little bit, but not as long as they were maybe in the past.
That is interesting, Connor. And because there's so much more information available, is it possible that teams just adapt faster? There's more analytics, more charting of every possible thing on every single play faster than we ever have before, right? You can get all that information in a day or two, which, you know, I think was obviously it took longer before we had all these services like PFF and all these staff members that are working on these things. Yeah, that is interesting. The creativity in football, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I had a conversation with Lynn Swan this morning. We're doing like Super Bowl moments. And one thing that was interesting that he mentioned was that he was saying like when he played, like, he's like, well, it wasn't like we like schemed receivers open. Like I was just pretty much on my side of the field, you know, and like that was just where I was. Like sometimes I move into the slot a little bit, but it wasn't like these bunch formations or you're, you know, scheming guys with rubs or like, it was basically like, well, you're either open or not. And so that just made me think about all of the ways in which innovations are different today. And that does sort of feed into what you're saying, I think, Connor, is that like the cycles for these things are faster. So it's no longer necessarily a season long, perhaps half a season long, and then there's an adjustment. And we are seeing teams adjust faster in real time. I don't know. I like that, Connor. I think that's a smart take.
I mean, if it's even if it's remotely close to being correct, which with me, who knows? I mean,
it's just a toss up, you know, like the but, Oracle.
But if it's even remotely true, it makes what the Ravens have done all the more impressive, right?
Right.
I mean, with something that people have called gimmicky and, you know, whatever, you know, it's just basically the triple option and teams just aren't prepared to defend that, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, if you get 16 weeks to do it, somebody should be able to figure it out and nobody has. And I think that's a really interesting sort of thing that's running parallel to all the different dips and valleys that we're seeing there. Makes me wonder if my conspiracy that somebody knows the secret, but they're just waiting for the playoffs to deploy it against Baltimore.
I like that secret. And it did kind of seem this weekend, Gary and I talked about this on the Monday morning podcast, like the Browns had beaten the Ravens, which was still a stunner, you know, earlier in the season. And then the Ravens get off to another slow start in offense. And it was like, oh, do the Browns have the blueprint? And then this time that was not true. But there was a moment where it seemed like maybe we're seeing it again. All right, moving on to news topic number 3. The embattled Dallas Cowboys lost to the Eagles on Sunday, setting up a long shot parlay to win the NFC East. Dallas needs to beat Washington at home, and they need the Eagles to lose to the Giants on the road. The Eagles, meanwhile, need just a win. Who is going to win the worst division in football? And if Dallas loses, might Jerry Jones find someone else to drive his sleigh? Oh boy, Connor. Oh boy.
This show's not even half over.
I mean, we're just really, we're swimming in the puns. We're really swimming in the puns there. But all right. So who is your pick, Connor?
I don't know. I had talked to one of our coworkers yesterday, Albert Breer, who was at the game. I talked to you today. And now just the tone of the conversations has me believing that the Cowboys are still going to find their way into the playoffs. I don't know. I don't know if that's your feeling, but the way that you talked to me about it, or at least mentioned it to me, and then the way that Albert said it, I'm very impressionable. And now all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh no, the Cowboys are just going to back into the playoffs here.
Well, it might stem with Gary, because on the Monday morning podcast, we were talking about the Cowboys-Eagles game, and I was saying, well, the Cowboys are just limping to this finish line, you know, and it's a matter of days before they move on from Garrett. And Gary's like, well, you know, the Giants could still beat the Cowboys, or the Giants could still beat the Eagles, rather, and the Cowboys could win the division. And I was like, well, yes, of course, because of Danny Dimes. I mean, so maybe this all starts with Gary, but I don't know. I'm not convinced the Eagles will necessarily. I don't think beating the Giants is a slam dunk. I got a kick out of the. Okay, how funny was that post-game press conference? I'm normally not one to be like, wow, a fan crashed it. But it was more Doug Peterson's reaction when the fan asked the question in his post-game press conference. Did you see this video, Connor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And the fan's like in like the most Philly accent possible, like, meeting Eli next week, what do you think? Like this like half-formed question, which whatever, we've all asked half-formed questions. And then Doug Peterson's like, is he credentialed? Which like sounded like someone had scripted the line in a bit. Like it was just so funny. It was just like standing there like, is he credentialed? Like I thought that was hilarious. But they will not be meeting Eli next week. They'll be meeting this, you know, yet again a revelation, Connor, Daniel Jones. So I don't know.
That was the first time that in a while where I've seen a coach like, even in a very like fleeting way, like declare some level of respect for the press.
Yes, you know what maybe I mean? That's why I liked it so much.
Like, hey, like, you know, obviously it all comes back to the 2010 Jets. Do you remember when Rex Ryan's press conference used to be in that glass enclosed coaches club at MetLife Stadium, and every Yahoo with a ticket used to be able to get in there and start screaming during
that was a terrible idea.
And Rex, you know, not in a bad way, and I'm not saying he was being disrespectful to us. I think he was always very respectful to us, but he would answer those questions. He'd be like, yeah, we're gonna get after it, and, you know, and kind of play into it when, like, everybody is just trying to get their job done. So thanks, Doug. I really appreciated that.
Yeah. So one thing that I saw that Zach Ertz reportedly gave his teammates a speech before the game. Now, this is really in our wheelhouse, Connor. Tell me if you've heard this before. Spanish conquistador Cortez, they were landing in the city of Veracruz, and he told the troops that to burn the ships because they would not be able to go back. This was a Rex Ryan motivational tactic.
Wow.
Rex said, burn the boats 1 year. So that was the motivation before beating the Cowboys. But see, this is why I'm kind of thinking that it's not a slam dunk, because you basically, your season's on the line this week. You have to win this game. You go in there and you give everything you have, and then it's like the natural, like, emotional letdown the following week. Like, it kind of cues up nicely here, Connor.
Yeah, and imagine if the Eagles do somehow get in, then how gassed they're going to be after essentially playing three elimination games in a row just to make the postseason.
Right.
I mean, that's like, that's intense. And so is bringing up the Spanish conquistadors before the game. That's like, that's pretty wild.
Yeah,
you know?
I think this came up with the Jets. I wrote about this in an article, I remember, before the AFC Championship game in January 2011. So it came up at some point during the 2010 season. So it seems like one of these typical, like, you know, we have no turning back, we have nothing to lose, right? So it seems to be in the rotation. But I think we've both talked ourselves into the Cowboys winning the NFC East. Gosh.
Ugh.
It wasn't like this wasn't where I expected to end up, Connor, that we'd both be in agreement on this.
You know, you know what it is? It's that I wrote yesterday that Jason Garrett should be gone right now. I mean, they should do it right now. And inevitably what that means, based on my entire library of content over the course of 10 years, is that he's going to win three playoff games and he's going to somehow, like, sneak into the Super Bowl, and I'm going to look stupid. So I'm ready for it.
Okay, you know,
it's
you're just bracing for that.
It's the inevitable. I do have a question, though. So say you were giving that speech.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of historical perspective that needs to be sort of addressed there, but you only probably have a tight window and you have to be punchy. Do you include, like, hey, this is the reason that they were sailing to this place to fight? Like, or are you just like, hey, this is what happened. They burned the boats, and then that's it.
Burn the boats. You know, yep. Yeah.
Just burn the boats.
Just burn the boats. Yeah.
You're not going to try to get into any, you know, really, really tell a story, weave a tale.
Yeah. Probably not. Probably keep it punchy and then go get a snack.
That's good. All right. Oh, this is a good one. Okay. Three teams, not a good pun, but I think a fun topic. They're all fun topics, but
they're all good puns, Connor.
Three teams, Oakland, Pittsburgh, and Dallas, who we just discussed, have interesting win and in scenarios on Sunday, with the Raiders needing the most help to pinball into the postseason, but it's still possible. Are we setting ourselves up for a thrilling weekend here with a lot of surprises, or will these three teams be sitting at home next weekend celebrating a blue Christmas?
Ah, a blue Christmas. That's pretty good, Connor. The scenarios are extremely interesting. The weirdest part was that, like, the Titans losing on this past weekend had, like, no bearing on the situation. That was,
yeah.
Well, for the Steelers, I guess. I guess it did have a bearing for the Raiders. It allowed the Raiders to still be alive. The Raiders situation is just, like, totally bizarre because they had this, like, late season collapse and they still have a chance of getting in. So I don't know, Connor. I'm not sure that I see the Raiders getting in, but the scenario is, like, not totally out of the question.
Yeah, so it's they get in if they beat the Broncos in Denver on Sunday, then Pittsburgh loses at Baltimore, and then Tennessee loses to Houston. And then the Colts beat the Jaguars in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
But here's an interesting nugget. on this, and now I'm not going to be able to pull it up in time. But the Denver Broncos, surprisingly, are playing like one of the better teams in football over the second half of the season. So I think that might be the hardest part for Oakland, is to work around that. Denver's a tough place to play, obviously, you know, especially in the winter. But okay, here we go. This is from their director of communications. So the Broncos have the third youngest roster in the NFL and have won three of their last four and are 6-5 since their 0-4 start.
So, I don't know.
I think that might be the hardest part for Oakland. I mean, they're a team that has struggled to put things together consistently on offense.
Yeah, because you can talk about all the other parts of the scenario, and you know, probably the one other one is that, you know, the Ravens have to beat the Steelers, which would normally be pretty likely, but except for the fact that this game doesn't mean anything to the Ravens, who have already clinched home field advantage. So depending on what their strategy is in that game could change how that goes. But I think you're right, Connor. The Broncos have been resurgent with Drew Lock. They're 3-1 with their rookie or quarterback in starting the game. So I agree. I don't think that's a slam dunk necessarily either. And the way that the Raiders have kind of underachieved, and they basically had two consecutive farewells to California in a row, I could see them not winning that game.
Pittsburgh's is not as severe. They have to beat the Ravens, and the Titans need to lose to the Texans, or they can tie the Ravens and the Titans can lose to the Texans, or they can lose to the Ravens and the Titans lose to the Texans, and the Colts beat the Jaguars, and the Raiders lose to the Broncos.
I'd rather see the Titans in the playoffs than the Steelers.
Me too.
I'm a lot more interested in them right now.
Ryan Tannehill is resurgent. There was like two or three times in that game where, you know, they put Marshawn Lattimore on A.J. Brown and still managed to find him. It wasn't like Lattimore took that entire field away. I just feel like the Titans have been so hamstrung on their passing game throughout the Mariota era, and whether that was a lack of vision or he just wasn't the right fit for what they were trying to do there. I don't know. I think we're seeing a lot of these pieces in a new light, and we're almost kind of learning about the Titans as we go with this new quarterback. So yeah, I'd love to see what they could become. I thought they played this. They hung pretty tough with the Saints, who needed that game on Sunday for seeding purposes. And I'd much rather that than like a limping, you know, whatever you want to call it, carousel of Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph. That just doesn't do it for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they had a chance to beat the Saints, and they did so without Derrick Henry. So I think there's a lot to be intrigued about with the Titans.
Do you think any of the outside looking in teams actually get in? So we said the Cowboys. We like the Cowboys.
Yeah, we like the
Pittsburgh
Cowboys.
Or Oakland or now.
I'm gonna go with just the Cowboys out of that group, Connor.
I think so too, because I don't know if Houston's gonna play all their best players. You know, they're kind of locked in. I mean, they can waver a little bit, but not to the point where you'd probably want to risk, you know, losing Deshaun Watson or any of those guys. I don't know. I think that might be a game that the Titans can win.
Yeah, I think they could win against the Texans regardless. So yeah, I think it's those would be my picks, Connor. All right, topic number 5. The LA Rams will miss the playoffs for the first time in the Sean McVay era. Speaking to NFL Network's Mike Silver, the young head coach said he was sick at the idea of sitting home, while others anonymously intimated to the reporter that big changes are on the way in LA. Is that just tough talk, or will we see some coordinators and other high-profile names be sent home for Christmas? I find the Rams pretty fascinating, because even despite the Rams' loss to the 49ers and that ending their playoff hopes, like, I felt like that game was a showcase of all of the reasons that Sean McVay is a good coach. But they were so all in on this era, to the point where they are now set up to go 5 years without drafting someone in the first round. 2017, they gave up the pick for Goff. In 2018, it was the trade for Cooks. 2019, they traded out of the first round because the Falcons wanted to come up to get Caleb McGarry. And then in 2020 and 2021, those first round picks went for the Ramsey trade. So that is like you know, an extreme level of sort of mortgaging the future for trying to win now and feeling like you have a roster that can win and just need one or two other things to get over the hump. And maybe you say, okay, first round picks are 50-50 proposition anyway, so it's not a huge deal, or it's just a different way of team building, right? You're bringing in something that's a known commodity, and maybe that's smarter than taking a gamble in the draft. But it is definitely like an all-in approach that is different from what we've seen from a lot of other teams. And so that is another reason why I think this next chapter for the Rams is so interesting.
Do you think that what Les Snead did on the building side there was your typical general manager, you know, I know I'm in trouble, I'm going to throw all my chips in the table thing, and then it just caught fire, and now they're sort of trying to figure out how to deal with it all? Or do you think that this was a vision? I mean, I know that, you know, Howie Roseman always gets credit for sort of being that high wire act general manager and always balancing the finances afterwards and figuring it out. This seems to be a little bit different. I don't know. Do you think that this was 3 years ago? Did they see themselves kind of in this position? Or do you think it was sort of a high end bet that cashed a little bit, and now they have to figure out what to do with it?
Yeah, I think it was just a different strategy for team building. Like, I think they just felt like we're going to be a little bit more aggressive, and they started to do it while Goff was on the rookie contract, and then it sort of started to work. They were getting all these pieces in place, and then after last year's Super Bowl, or going to the Super Bowl, they felt like maybe we just need one or two other things to get over the hump. So I can see why they did it. I just think, you know, maybe now you could be in a tough spot moving forward. What changes do you think are on the horizon, Connor?
Well, the NFL Network story mentioned Todd Gurley, which would be gigantic, right? That would be a huge change. I mean, there's so many veterans on that roster, Eric Weddle and Clay Matthews, and what happens there, and Andrew Whitworth. You know, obviously he was mulling retirement after the Super Bowl year. Either way, that's a lot of valuable knowledge and skill to replace if you're really trying to do a hard shift towards a younger, faster team. And then Wade Phillips, I mean, that's probably the other big question mark, right? Is, do you bring back your defensive coordinator, or do you find someone that has sort of a really interesting idea for how to propel people like Aaron Donald a step forward?
Yeah, it kind of comes back to a great point that you made last week, Connor, where it's like we've said in the past, this team is positioned to be a contender for a really long time. And it's, you know, we said that with the Eagles and the Falcons. And I think we thought, okay, well, things are working with McVay and Goff, and Gurley is a big part of the offense, and they've got lots of pieces on defense, and just feels like this is a really good team. And now, after one down season, it does seem like it is in need of a pretty, you know, drastic is not the word, but I think it is in need of a makeover more than we probably thought going into this year.
Yeah. You know, without the picks, you know, how difficult is that? Who knows? But, you know, it's again, I mean, it's so much that we thought that last year, and going into this year, that the Rams were putting a ton of weight on a 31-year-old first-time head coach. And now, really, I mean, not only is he going to have had a Super Bowl season under his belt, he's going to have to help orchestrate and lead this sort of on-the-fly rebuild with no first-round picks. And I'm sure that he's going to have a heavy hand in that because, you know, he knows what can make his offense work. And so I think it's just fascinating that, you know, 2 years ago we were saying that this guy might not be adept enough to coach at the NFL level because he's too young, and now he's basically going to be overseeing this massive turnaround.
And it's not what the Rams had hoped going into this new stadium. Both the Rams and the Chargers are going into open up this, you know, incredibly expensive new palace with coming off down seasons. Obviously the Chargers season was a little bit more disappointing than the Rams, but both of them, it's a wild swing from last year where there was so much excitement and optimism, and you know, You know, I don't want to say there was so much interest around football in LA, because I think that's still an uphill battle a little bit. But it was there was definitely a buzz, right? And now this year, it's kind of bottomed out a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what both teams do to kind of rebuild that buzz moving into the new stadium.
Can you imagine the optics of next year? There's going to be some bad games.
Yeah.
Like, with a lot of seats available, you know?
Yeah. Well, can't be worse than the soccer stadium, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right, Connor, do you want to move into the... I'm a little nervous to say it, but do you want to move into the Oracle?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, let's give it a shot. I'm beat up. This has been a tough year for the prediction business, but I don't know. We're heading into the final week of the season, which means that we're going to get sort of a modified Black Monday, but really it's not Black Monday anymore. It's whatever, Black Sunday night or whatever you want to call it. But my bold prediction here is that we only have four more moves left to be made at the end of the season. I think there's only going to be four more coaching changes.
Okay.
And so I think Jacksonville, Cleveland, the Giants, and Dallas. I think those are the moves.
Those are the four. Okay.
That would leave out Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Which for some reason, I don't know why, but I'm feeling like maybe they would have done something to give Dan Quinn one more year. I don't know.
You know how every year during this time, we always say there's a surprise firing?
Yes.
Feel like this is a year where there'll be a surprise person that hangs on to his job, whether mm-hmm. that's Dan Quinn, or perhaps that's Doug Marrone, or Gary threw this out on the podcast over the weekend, and I think it's a long shot, but Pat Shurmur, right? You know, I just feel like there's going to be someone that we've written off for weeks and they decide to keep. And I think of that list, Dan Quinn is probably the most likely. And I would say second most likely would be Marrone.
That's interesting. What makes you think, what's giving you the Marrone feels a little bit?
Just because they let go of Coughlin. And so I think maybe they would say, this was where we thought the problem was, and we're going to move forward without him, but keep the other guys in place.
Interesting.
As a possibility.
Pat Shurmur would be a wild card. But
that would be a big wild card, yeah. Yeah.
There would be a lot of unhappy people if that happened.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not saying that's on the list of likely. I'm just thought it was an interesting thing to throw out there that Gary did on the Monday pod, so...
You're a trend. I have to publicly thank you for this, because I did a trends piece like a couple days ago, and I was just nailed in writer's block. Couldn't think of anything, and Jenny just starts nailing these things one after another. Good idea, good idea, good idea. You have an eye for trends, and I love the surprise non-firing. That is like brilliant. I think that is so good. You're a trend. You're a tastemaker. You always have
been. Tastemaker. I think you're being overcomplimentary, because it's always easier to suggest things to write about when you're not the one actually writing them, Connor. So, you know, I'm just like, oh, you should just say this, this, or this. And then, like, you know, you'll figure out some way to make it creative. And then you did. So, you know, I think that's how it goes. All right. We'll move into the Vrentas consensus, Connor. I think that this is a true consensus, right? Some of them have been more consensus than others, but just wanted to say thanks to our our listeners for listening all season. This has been a true highlight for me, Connor. You know, you and I first met each other 9 years ago, 10, mm-hmm. 8 years ago, something around there, covering the Jets for the Star Ledger, as we have talked about often on the show. I never thought we'd have a podcast together, and it has been something that I've looked forward to every week. It's been a little bit of a weird season for me. I spent half of this season not covering the NFL as closely as I normally would. I was working on a soccer story, and so it wasn't quite the normal season that I would have. And I feel like in those weeks where I was, you know, in Tacoma watching an NWSL game, I feel like, Connor, you really picked up the energy of the show, and you really made sure that we stayed on track and probably hosted more times than your allotment. And so, but this has been really enjoyable. I look forward to this every week.
we met before we knew what podcasts were.
Right. And great and then, point.
Lo and behold, 9 years later, we have one. I agree, though. I mean, I would say thank you to the listeners because we tried to, you know, I think we both consciously tried to create something that was a little bit different in that we like to have like a friendly, constructive discussion about football where, you know, and we all get to just kind of bounce things off each other and try to make interesting points and make it a fun listen. And the comments that we've gotten back, you know, especially on Twitter and through TalkBack have been just so nice and helpful. And it makes us think that at least like we found a little niche, like a little community there. And we love hearing from all the people that have listened. It's been a really cool experience.
Yeah, those comments really, really make our day. So we appreciate everyone who has listened and has reached out. So on that note, we hope everyone has a great holiday. We will see you again. I guess it'll still be our next episode. Well, no, it'll be New Year's Day it comes out, I guess. So it will be 2020. So we hope that everyone has a great start to the new year. The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.